together and teach us things about ourselves, because it's good to know we can listen live.
Are you curious about bodies, pleasure, and possibilities? And what about curious about what others are up to on the planet when it comes to pleasure, sex, and play? Have you considered what pleasure can do for your life, your body, and your bank account? Do you know something magical, delightful, and out of this world orgasmic is not only possible for you, but totally available to you? If you're ready to be the magical, sexual, sexy beast you know you can be, and you just need the tools to get there, you're in the right place. Now, here's the host of The Pleasure Zone, sensual movement artist, relationship and sex alchemist, Milica Jelinic.
Welcome, my sweet pleasure seekers. Oh, guys, we have a great conversation that's going to be occurring today. Conversation, I guess I'm talking to myself, but I pretend like I'm talking with you and to you. So there you go. If you're brand new to the Pleasure Zone, you're going to find out that if you look back at some of the topics, you're going to find things that range anywhere from the history of sex toys to, hey, how did that trauma affect my libido? To, hey, what kind of food could I eat that would get my libido back on track? To, let's talk about all the variations in genitals. Actually, I did an entire show on the variations in hymens. Everything in between. History, biology, anthropology, sociology, you name it. If there is a topic I have not talked about and you look back, or you've been an avid listener and listened to them all, and you're like, hey, you've talked about all of this, but you haven't talked about this topic yet. And sometimes I've had people do that. I'm like, oh, but wait, yes, I have. And, you know, it's like they're like, oh, you haven't talked about objectophilia yet. Oh, yes, I have, years ago, but I could probably again, because I see it kind of popping up in my feed again. People are talking about objectophilia. That's a whole other side conversation. But what we are going to be talking about today, and I do mention these topics a lot on this show, we're going to be, and today I'm just slapping them together. We're going to be talking about the five love languages, which I refer to pretty much every episode, and attachment styles, which I don't refer to as much, but we are going to be looking at how those combine. And, you know, even though they might seem to be different, they're actually not. And you can look at attachment styles and you can almost decipher from attachment styles the most likely love languages that a person will have with certain attachment styles. So I first was like thinking about this topic. I was like, oh, well, it makes sense that somebody who's had anxious attachment style because of, you know, insecure, you know, because of their history of abandonment, that they might, you know, find that quality time would be one of the ways to show love, or that because of abandonment too, that they might find that having words of affirmation are helpful, or touch. And so I was thinking about these, like, conceptually, I was just playing around with what kind of matches with what. And then I thought, oh, this is brilliant. And then I thought, oh, I'm going to go Google this. And in fact, lots of other people thought it was brilliant too. But what I did find was a consistency across the board with a lot of different doctors, researchers, and my own thoughts. So I really like that there is a general consistency. What I did notice is that there are a lot of different ways that people have named the attachment styles and attachment theory. So you might hear me use different references to words within attachment theory. Some of them they don't change, like secure attachment style is consistent across the board. But then there are some other ones that do kind of change a bit. So I'll just let you know so that you're not like, what does that mean? I'm not sure what that means. Like, you might have heard of secure attachment. You might have heard of anxious attachment, but it's also sometimes called anxious preoccupied attachment. There's also avoidant attachment, which is also sometimes called avoidant dismissive attachment. And then there's another one called fearful avoidant attachment that's also been renamed disorganized attachment. So, or renamed, or maybe there's two names for the same thing, right? So sometimes it'll be termed one way for parent-child attachment styles, and then another way for adult attachment styles. So you might hear me refer to all those different names. But to keep it simple, I'm going to just refer to it as secure, anxious, avoidant, and disorganized, just so that we don't have like, what is that? How many words are there? We're keeping it simple. Also, keeping it simple just to keep simple in my brain while I talk about it. So, where did these theories come from? You know, we can talk about that for sure. And I'm sure some of you are wondering, like, why the heck, why on earth do I talk about this stuff? So, I'm a holistic health practitioner as well as a sex and intimacy coach. I said that really funny, intimacy coach. And I have, for the longest time, had a fascination with all things sex, all things bodies, all things health, how they come together. Starting in university, I studied psychology, and for a lot of fun, I really focused in on all things to do with sex and sexuality, human sexuality, and that's what got me through school. It's what got me the grades to get me to graduate, to some of the other more theoretical things that were too dry for my brain. I took them because I needed to, but they weren't the things that excited me. The classes that excited me were the ones on human sexuality, sexuality in general, and also, feminist classes and rights and the history that we weren't taught in school. So it's all the, history of different women. That stuff was fascinating to me. And I just love the history of the weird things. Like, if there's a show on about the history of dildos, I'm in. I'd rather watch the history of dildos than the history of some particular war. But within that war, I'd want to hear all the stories about all the prostitutes, all the sex that happened, and I'd also want to know about weapons making and different ways of survival and medicines they used, and also hygiene. I'm really like, that stuff always fascinates me. I remember going to a historical place in Canada. We have these like four old fortresses that you can go to, and people dress like it was the 17 and 1800s. And I remember asking the guy, like, walked in. And the guy's like taking us for a tour, and he goes, this area was blah blah blah, and he's like, and people stayed here, and I'm like, but where were the latrines? Like, where did people poo? And he was like, well, we don't get that question very often. I'm like, how do people not want to know where the poop went? I want to know, where did the poo go? And he's like, actually, it was all kind of mixed in over here. I'm like, so people were literally like right beside their shit all the time. So that stuff fascinates me, because then you've got disease that ends up happening, and that the disease creates death, and then what happens to society, and then because of that death, then we have new medicines that are created. Poop is fascinating. I don't want to be pooped on, though. That's not my thing, though. I do appreciate people are into scat play and muck play. But also, I that's not something I would consent to. But I, if you're into consenting to that, go for it. All for consent. So, oh, that was an offside track. But in case you were wondering, why do I qualify? It's been a fascination for life, and actually working with couples, I have to say, is funny because I was talking to a client today, and I was like, how far back does it go that I've had like mediation abilities? I'm like, wow, since I was like 3 or 4, I would mediate relationships. I would mediate, have to like, or feel like I was talking on behalf of my parents who were divorced. So it was like I was the go-between. And I can understand both sides of stories. So as a sex and intimacy coach, as a relationship coach, I'm gonna, look at that and go, wow, I've been mediating relationships for 45 years. But technically, no, I didn't have the training. But I could also, because I could see different sides, and sometimes I would get pulled in as a child, like I didn't know how not to. So But as I got older, I could go, I can see where you came from. I could see your story too behind it, and I can see your history of why you feel the way you feel. So all that's real fun for me. And looking at relationships and how we develop relationships is a lot of fun for me too. Like looking at attachment styles is fascinating. How do we develop those from early childhood? How do we develop our love languages? And I do think that they are connected in terms of like growing up, how we've created attachment to our primary caregivers and or how they've created attachment with us would reflect on what our needs were or weren't met. And then that would reflect on what love languages we require. And some of those love languages are innate, I think, as well. So whether, we were given our love languages fully, whether you had your primary love language was touch and your parents cuddled you all the time, so you felt like your love language was fulfilled, or whether they were avoidant and kind of pulled back from you, so you didn't feel like your love language was fulfilled. Either way, I think the attachment styles and all of your early childhood experience definitely contributes a lot to what your love languages are. And I also have to say, I think it is nature and nurture, not nature versus nurture. So I think we're looking at both of those things. So when we are looking at, I think I just need to give you guys also a lowdown on like where, if you are brand new to the love languages, I think it was 1992 was the first time Gary Chapman had his five love languages book published. And in it, he looks at basically where he was working with couples for a really long time, and he started to notice that some couples were feeling unfulfilled in certain areas. And he realized that love was being shown in different ways. And he kind of established that there were basically five core languages of love. And within them, he talks about the different like dialects within, like, say, physical touch. There are different dialects of that. So when you know them, and you can kind of go, you can go online and you can find out what your love languages are. You have all of them, just one will be more primary than the other. Sometimes you'll have two that are prominent and more primary than others. But essentially, we all have all five, just some are not as important to us. So the five are words of affirmation, quality time, receiving gifts, acts of service, and physical touch. So how do they play along with attachment theory? And attachment theory originates from a British psychologist named John Bowlby. And I never know if I'm pronouncing his name right because it looks like Bowlby and it looks like Bowlby, but there you go. So he was investigating lots of things to do with how children react when their mothers leave and re-enter a room. And through that, he started to recognize that there were different ways the child would react to the parent. And so the four most commonly recognized forms of attachment, which we talked about briefly, I'm just going to rename them for the simplified versions. He called them secure attachment, anxious preoccupied attachment, which I'm going to just refer to as anxious attachment, avoidant dismissive, which I'm going to refer to as avoidant, and fearful avoidance attachment, which I'm going to refer to as disorganized attachment. So those different attachment styles teach us how to do things like manage conflicts, and they also assist us with different how we might act in certain social situations, and they also help us with emotional regulation. So for example, if you have anxious attachment, then emotional regulation would mean that you're having anxiety, so you're not able to regulate yourself emotionally that well. So we are going to break this down tonight. We're going to look at it from the attachment styles and what languages fall under them, rather than looking at the love languages with the attachment styles in them. Because it's a little easier, I find it's easier to simplify. And when I first was playing with it in my head, I was like, ah, I saw this chart. It's like, ah, here are the attachment styles. And within these, what are the primary love languages? So when we say these are the love languages, it's more like these are the primary love languages because we all have all of them and we have variations within the dialects of that love language as well. So we're going to talk about all those. We got four to talk about. We got the five love languages slapped in there. We're going to talk about those when we come back from this commercial break. You're listening to the Pleasure Zone here on Inspired Choices Network, and we'll be right back after this commercial.
Are you secretly a voyeur, wondering what's going on in other people's sex lives? What if now is the time for a totally different sexual evolution? Are you interested in people who are pioneers of different sexual and pleasurable practices? Lean in now with Milica Jelinic, where she will entice you and your body to know your own pleasure zone. On the Pleasure Zone radio show with sensual movement artist Milica Jelinic, you'll receive tools, inspiration, and a foundation to allow yourself to receive more in your sex life, and quite possibly other areas of your life as well. Listen for the Pleasure Zone with Milica every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 7 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Mountain Time, and 5 p.m. Pacific Time on InspiredChoicesNetwork.com.
Are you a subject matter expert? Are you here to share your expertise with an audience waiting to hear from you in only the way you can deliver? Are you ready to have your voice amplified across the airwaves? Inspired Choices Network has a global radio platform streaming to millions of people across the world. Professionally produced and supported by an accomplished team every step of the way, you can broadcast from anywhere in the world, knowing your voice matters, and we ensure it is delivered with ease and efficiency. Eager to hear your message, the world awaits. Contact us today to become an Inspired Choices Network radio host. Email becomeahost@inspiredchoicesnetwork.com.
This is the Pleasure Zone with sensual movement artist Milica Jelinic. To participate in the program today, join our live studio audience in our chat room at inspiredchoicesnetwork.com. You could also make the choice to ask or comment by email. info@MilicaJelinic.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back, my sweet pleasure seekers. Tonight, we're looking at how the five love languages and the four attachment styles work together. And, you know, it's kind of a fun thing to play with because, you know, I know quite a few people who have read the work of Bowlby and they know about their attachment styles, or they've read further works by other people who have looked at his work and then, you know, discussions on attachment styles. And then I've also known a lot of people who look at love languages. And when I'm working with people, I find that they usually know one or the other. Sometimes they know about both, but they haven't really looked at how one affects the other for them. In an episode that I did last week, I think it was, I talked about a lot more about abandonment issues and how a lot of abandonment issues are part of the anxious attachment ways of being. And a lot of those are results of having losses in life, whether it's, you know, the trauma of losing somebody or feeling abandoned. So abandonment issues lead to anxious attachment style. Anxious attachment style will have you feel like you're abandoned, or that you were abandoned before being abandoned, that sort of thing. So we're going to look at all of these today, but we're also going to look at the love languages that can assist people in these different attachment styles. And also a reminder from the last episode is that we can go from things like anxious attachment to secure attachment, and there are ways to do that. I encourage you to go back and listen to that episode so that I don't repeat the entire show. But essentially what it comes down to is reframing your thoughts. So whether you do that through something like any kind of neuro-linguistic programming like NLP, or any kind of thought repatterning, and then doing breath work and then connecting to your core, being connected to something that isn't transient, something that's going to fall apart. So your core beliefs, whatever that happens to be, some people will focus on the universe, some people will focus on God of their understanding. So that can really help to bring back secure attachment. And then we're going to look at the other things like avoidant attachment and how that shows up with love languages as well, et cetera, et cetera. So first of all, let's understand a little bit about the secure attachment, because I think a lot of people think, well, that's the ideal. That's what we're all targeting. That's the ideal. But even within the secure attachment, you can find people who are narcissists because they're so secure. They think that it's almost like they've gone extreme. They're so secure that they think they're the bomb and that the whole world revolves around them. Sometimes there's avoidant attachment in there too, so that they bring you in enough to make you feel secure, and then they avoid the crap out of you. So now you're like, wah. So they might have two things flipping around there. You can have combinations of these attachment styles happening for sure. So you might have, just like with love languages, you might have the primary, but then you might have some secondary stuff happening, or tertiary even. So it's complex, guys. I hope we can get through this today. All right. So with secure attachment style in adults, in adult relationships, you're going to find a few things that usually go on. Usually relationships that have secure attachment styles don't have a lot of issues happening, but they still can. It's not that they're perfect. And one of the things that is beneficial with secure attachment style is that somebody who has that style will generally take responsibility for their mistakes or anything that comes up where they might have hurt your feelings. And they're also generally willing to seek help. And they're also usually willing to ask for support. They don't have a fear of, not as much of a fear of rejection as some of the other love languages. One of the reasons is that they have a good sense of self-worth. And again, that's why sometimes people will, who are narcissistic, who have a lot of sense of self-worth, maybe an exaggerated sense of self-worth, will have what appears to be a secure attachment at first. So when you do have a sense of self-worth, you feel good about yourself, self-esteem is up there, you probably also feel good about your relationships, and there isn't a lot of fear happening. So you feel more secure in yourself, and that's a reflection in your relationships. You also feel more secure in intimate relationships as well. And it would also, because of that security and self-esteem, you're going to have a sense of feeling more at ease and vulnerable when it comes to expressing things like your hopes and your fears and your needs, and also being sexually expressive, being able to ask for your needs to be met sexually, feeling open and feeling confident about that. Even if your partner might reject some of the ideas you have, like sexual ideas, you know, and I talk about my do's, don'ts, maybe list. This is a great list to have. You can kind of go through things that you like and are interested in, and then share that with your partner. You know, somebody with secure attachment is going to feel really confident in sharing that list and be like, oh, okay, my partner doesn't want to do water sports. That's okay. Like, we don't have to do that. We can do something else. For those of you who don't know what I just meant by that, it's, I'm not talking about jet skis. So when we're looking at what, you know, what somebody in a secure attachment with secure attachment is looking for, they, if they are narcissistic, they're going to be looking for somebody who has more of an anxious attachment style, because they're going to want them to become dependent on them. If they are having a secure attachment style, but not always, sometimes they'll have a secure attachment style and they truly are wanting to invite you into also feeling secure. That is also a possibility. So there are no hard, fast rules on this. Like, if the person is secure in their attachment and they're inviting you into a relationship, even though you have anxious, avoidant attachment, that means they're a narcissist. No, not guaranteed, but definitely look for some of the behavioral things that would prove that to be a relationship that works for you rather than against you. But this show is not about narcissists, but I just wanted to mention that, because in a lot of the write-ups, there was questions about narcissism and different attachment styles. So, yeah. So generally, what you want in your secure attachment relationship is you want to feel happy and you want your partner to feel happy. you know, when you need support, you're feeling good enough to ask for it. And when they need support, they're willing to ask you for it and you're happy to give it. So there's a lot of great things with secure attachment style. And, you know, even when things poop hits the fan and you might have setbacks or whatever, there's always a way to bounce back. And if both partners are secure, you're going to have more of bounceability, I guess you could say. You're just going to be able to bounce back when anything hits the ground, like your house could burn down. You're like, we got this, you know, rather than falling to pieces and going into anxiety and stuff like that. So secure attachment can do a lot of things for in terms of love languages. I think the chance is that you're going to have probably a lot, like all of the love languages almost equally. So you might feel that, you know, getting words of affirmation might be really nice just because you want to feel like you've done a good job and you're getting that feedback, like, good job, we did this, you know, kind of like, hey, teamwork, we're in this together. So those kinds of words of affirmation might be helpful. But I do also think that it's pretty much all traits for them. Though a lot of the writings were just saying that mostly it's words of affirmation with somebody who has secure attachment style, and sometimes things like acts of service so that they also feel like you're, you know, they'll do for you and you'll do for them. So because of that too, you can, it's, you know, secure attached, people with secure attachment tend to have, be very trusting. So, and because they have, they're trusting, they have good self-esteem, they usually don't require a lot. So there, it's like, you know, you can hear about relationships that are, what's the word for it? It's like high maintenance. These are very low maintenance relationships. Secure attachment people are like super low maintenance. You know, you can randomly give them a gift and they're happy. You can have quality time, but they don't require a lot from you necessarily. And you don't, and if you're secure, securely attached to them as well, then you don't usually require a lot from them either. So that it's to me, the secure attachment has almost every love language quite equally. And if they do require something like, you know, touch or words of affirmation, they might tell you, or if they require acts of service, like, hey, can you do this for me? They'll ask for it because they're secure enough to be able to ask for that. So it'll pop up once in a while, and it actually just makes things so much easier. Being in a relationship with somebody who is securely attached can make things incredibly easy, and it's a breath of fresh air. So I'm going to, oh boy, I'm just looking at my time and thinking, how am I going to work all this out? I'm going to work all this out. So we will be talking about things like avoidant attachment, whereas the technical term is avoidant dismissive attachment. We'll be talking about all of those as well. I don't want to dive too deep into that until the next break, but let's dive in a little bit more on secure attachment. And while we're on it, just if you can think about anybody in your life that you would say is, if it's a friend or a sibling or a parent, or maybe it's you, what are some of the qualities that I've mentioned that you would say you identify with? Do you have good self-esteem? Are you able to ask for help when you need it? Do you find that you bounce back pretty well? Are you comfortable with verbal communication? Or if you're nonverbal, are you comfortable with communication, communicating your feelings, your ideas, your needs, your hopes? Are you confident when it comes to intimacy, physical intimacy? Are you able to be intimate, to be able to break down those barriers and be able to be really present with your partner and be able to see them clearly and see yourself? Also, I think there's just so much value when we can see certain, and you might see certain traits in here, but you might not see all of them. So you could be on your way to feeling securely attached. You might be moving out of anxious attachment into secure attachment and just keep on going, keep doing all your diligent work with yourself, with reframing. And by that, I mean, like, when you're reframing, you're going into all the places where, you know, you might have felt abandoned, and then you look you reframe it and you can choose to either say, you know, in depending on how you want to reframe it, different methods, EFT does it differently than NLP, does it different than different reframing methods. But to simplify it is, you know, instead of not feeling loved, is the really simple method of reframing it is, I choose to feel and know love. I choose to feel and know love. I choose to feel and know love. So when you feel abandoned, sometimes you don't feel or know love, and you don't necessarily trust that people, when they say they love you, that they do. So you can also say, I choose to know and feel trust in myself and in universal light, God energy. I choose to feel and know. I choose it. And a lot of times we might say, you know, well, an affirmation should just be in the present. And the thing is, that's when we start to lie to ourselves, is like, I am loved. Well, if you don't believe it, then you're going to reinforce crap lies to yourself. So we don't want to reinforce crap. But the truth is, you might choose to feel and know love, and then you're actually reinforcing the truth, and then it'll evolve and it'll turn into, I know and feel love. Oh, I am love. Ooh, there we go, right? And it'll evolve. So we want to play with that evolution. So if you're not there yet, if you're still in anxious, moving towards secure attachment, if you can see some secure attachment styles in you, just start to play with some different affirmations that have that word choose in it. I choose to feel and know love. So we're going to head to our next commercial break. You're listening to The Pleasure Zone here on Inspired Choices Network, and we'll be right back after this commercial.
Are you secretly a voyeur, wondering what's going on in other people's sex lives? What if now is the time for a totally different sexual evolution? Are you interested in people who are pioneers of different sexual and pleasurable practices? Lean in now with Milica Jelinic, where she will entice you and your body to know your own pleasure zone. On the Pleasure Zone radio show with sensual movement artist Milica Jelinic, you'll receive tools, inspiration, and a foundation to allow yourself to receive more in your sex life, and quite possibly other areas of your life as well. Listen for the Pleasure Zone with Milica every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 7 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Mountain Time, and 5 p.m. Pacific Time on InspiredChoicesNetwork.com.
Interested in masturbating for money, copulating for consciousness, and pleasuring on purpose? 21 Days of Sexual Magicism with sensual movement artist Milica Jelinic is an exploration of tools, processes, and actions that you can use to create more for your life, your body, your money inflows, and so much more. Graduated learning for all levels of interest. Learn at your own pace via video classes or join the yearly live class. Take a peek at www.milicajelinic.com.
How wonderful would it be to carry your favorite Inspired Choices Network host with you throughout your day? Well, now you can. Inspired Choices Network now has its very own mobile app. Our free app offers live streaming shows, along with thousands of podcasts and TV episodes. Our shows cover a wide variety of topics. Whether you're waking up with us, carrying us through the day, and taking us to bed with you, we're always here for you to enjoy. We're easy to find. Just search for Inspired Choices Network in the Apple App Store or Google Play Store.
This is The Pleasure Zone with sensual movement artist Milica Jelinic. To participate in the program today, join our live studio audience in our chat room at InspiredChoicesNetwork.com. You could also make the choice to ask or comment by email, info@MilicaJelinic.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back, my sweet pleasure seekers. Tonight, we are talking about attachment styles, the four main attachment styles and the five love languages. And we're slapping them together and we're looking at what different attachment styles have for love languages as their primary love languages. So we were talking about secure attachment before the break. So if you happen to be in secure attachment or you are securely attached in relationships, then that one's for you. That segment's for you. We're moving on to avoidant attachment. So avoidant or avoidant dismissive attachment is, we're just going to call it avoidant for short. You'll find that in adults with the people with avoidant attachment, my mom has a lot of avoidant attachment style about her, where for those of you who know my mom, you'll go, oh, that makes total sense. But my mom isn't really into emotional intimacy. She can be emotionally intimate, but physical intimacy, not so much sometimes. Not really into hugging, but I think that's also due to neurodivergence. So avoidant attachment, you probably find that you really value your independence, your freedom, and more than anything, if you have a partner, you want to spend a lot of time away from them. You probably are really good with long distance relationships because you don't have to see the person very often, and it works for you to just have connecting like once in a blue moon. And they can often, what can happen is if you are an anxious, attached person and you are interested in somebody who's avoidant attached, has an avoidant attachment style, your anxious attachment neediness will drive the avoidant attachment person away, just like the plague, because they are going to feel overwhelmed and the more needy you get, the more space they want. So with avoidant attachment people, they actually work really well with in relationship with securely attached people because the securely attached people aren't worried about it. And they also can work, I think, really well with other people who have avoidant attachment because both of them like their freedom, but they also have to be kind of on the same wavelength at around the same time, like, oh, let's get together. Okay, cool. Otherwise, they'll just avoid all conversations and all things that need to be addressed. So as much as you can be really independent and care for yourself, you also don't see the value in others, and that can, or maybe you don't feel like you need others, but I'm going to say it as you don't necessarily see the value in having other people around. So it can be really tricky for somebody who needs things like words of affirmation or quality time to be with somebody who's avoidant attachment because they're not really interested in being there. But avoidant attachment might also be somebody who would give you gifts, and in turn they would be okay with gifts as a love language. And you know, occasionally like having intimacy would be fine, but not all the time. So you know, the love language of touch might not be so hot. Acts of service is probably okay, but generally they're not that receptive. So avoidant attachment isn't the most receptive people. They're not really into much around romance or intimacy in any way. And you know, usually they get super uncomfortable with conversations about feelings or anything like that, just feeling really cold. I would say if you guys know anything about Star Trek, these are like the Vulcans are avoidant attachment. You know, they have learned generationally how to control and repress their feelings, unless they're around Trillium, but that's a whole other discussion for, you know, a crazy sci-fi conversation, which I keep thinking I want to have like a discussion about the you know, space aliens and all of their fascinating potential around love languages and attachment styles. But again, that's not for today. That's for a whole other geek out day. And so yeah, if you feel like you identify as a Vulcan, the chances are you have avoidant attachment. And the chances are you don't really feel like a super need for people. And just like Vulcans with Ponfar every 7 years, you don't really need that much sex. And you know, you could be engaged to somebody as a Vulcan like your entire life, but not get married till you're 100. And so like that whole part of a relationship isn't that important, neither is romance. So I hope I have some sci-fi nerds out there who are totally getting what I'm talking about. So there's also with avoidant attachment that, you know, if somebody's not feeling very well, or if they're like, I'm sad, that you, if you're feeling sad and you're in a relationship with somebody who's got avoidant attachment, they're going to minimize your feelings. They're going to probably be like, oh, well, it doesn't matter. It's not important. Now, if a person has avoidant attachment and they would like to be securely attached, again, it's you can have like mixed combos happening of these things. And if you would primarily like to feel secure in a relationship, a lot of times people with avoidant attachment don't really care for like having a relationship, so they're not really looking to be securely attached. Although sometimes there's a deep yearning for relationship, as much as they're like avoiding it, they also deeply yearn for it. So there's this mixed bag happening, but also they're like, I don't know if I want to put in the effort, and I don't know if I can care that much. So it's a real mixed bag. It's a hard one to have. I would say that avoidant attachment would be quite a hard one to be living with, if you're in the mixed bag. But if you're feeling pretty good about, you know, being single, and you're feeling good about your space and whatever time you do get to spend with your partner, then good on you. Hopefully that there's not an issue for your partner, and that your partner doesn't feel like, you know, whatever issues they're bringing up are getting diminished. So sometimes with avoidant attachment, you can look like a person who doesn't care, and you can look super emotionally distant. You can just look mean, actually, to a lot of people who are just like, that was cruel and uncalled for and mean and what a jerk. It's just their attachment style. Like if we pulled it away from our egos and we could just observe it and go, oh, okay, that's just their attachment style. It's a lot less scary. But also, you know, one of the things that avoidant attachment style will do is because there's not really having a lot of regard of their own feelings. Like they're not really thinking about their feelings because they're avoiding them and dismissing their own feelings. You might find that avoidant attachment style ends up having a lot of affairs, or feeling because they don't really care, and it's all about proving their freedom and like, I'm independent, I can do whatever I want when I want, blah, 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 blah. So there is that happens. So we're gonna, oh my goodness, I have so little time left. I've got to get all this in. How am I talking so much? Okay, so let's break it down. So somebody with avoidant attachment, or avoidant dismissive attachment style, one of the greatest things that they will probably want in terms of love languages is, I would say that most of the time that they probably don't value the love languages. So they're avoiding most, where secure attachment could have value all of them kind of equally. Avoidant attachment might be like, none of those are that important to me. Although when they want something, for example, if they want to have that time with you, then avoidant attachment, I think because of the selfishness and independence, can often want that when they want it, they want it, and when they don't, they don't. So it can be kind of lonely being with somebody who's avoidant attachment. Now, anxious attachment, that's when you're like, you can feel really needy because of the abandonment issues that probably got you into anxious attachment. And I was very much anxious attached, which has also been called anxious preoccupied, or ambivalent anxious, or just anxious ambivalent. Like there's a combinations in there. So the anxious attachment style, and it was very much like that in my 20s, like early 30s. I totally lacked self-esteem. I craved emotional intimacy, but I also had a fear that whoever I was with didn't really want to be with me. Like somebody was always better. They had a better booty. They had better boobs. They were prettier. They were smarter. They had more money. Like I really didn't have a lot of self-esteem. So somebody with low self-esteem may have anxious attachment as one of their main attachment styles. So you might even feel bad about it because you might feel like overly clingy or needy, or having to spend a lot of time with your partner. and wanting a lot of attention, both like quality time is really important to somebody with anxious attachment. Quality time, words of affirmation, super important. Require them on like a regular basis to affirm your worth and your value and who you are and that you're loved and all of that. It is exhausting to be with somebody who has anxious attachment and they're living it full out all the time. So I encourage you, if you are experiencing, like if you're living with anxious attachment, to work on your stuff, connect with me. I've gone through it, and work on your stuff so that you can move into more secure attachment style and catch yourself when you're in anxious attachment, because you might slip back and forth sometimes, so that you can feel a lot more confident in your relationships. So the love language that, you know, there are several that an anxious attached style person would want. And sometimes they want gifts and lots of them to be affirmed that they're worthy and that the person loves them. And sometimes they want acts of service to know that the person feels like they're worthy of their acts of service. Like, all the love languages are really important to somebody with anxious attachment, though I would say primarily touch for confirmation that the person is present because of the abandonment issues, as well as quality time, super important because of that, and words of affirmation, I would say, are the top priorities for somebody with anxious attachment style. Oh, so I'm going to just give you one more minute for anxious attachment, then I'm going to head to the commercial break. So people with anxious attachment, some of the things to keep an eye on for you is if you like really crave an closeness and intimacy, and you really struggle with being on your own, you might be experiencing anxious attachment. And if you rely on your partner to fill that, that'll be part of it too. And you might even struggle to trust your partner. You might have doubts whether, you know, you might think they're cheating on you, or all kinds of stuff could be going on there. And you might also find that the intimacy part of your relationship can be very much geared towards the other person's pleasure, because you'll probably tend to be a people pleaser. So you'll forget to ask for what you want in the sack. You'll forget to ask for your needs in relationship. And you probably won't ask for those things because you feel like if you do, the person's going to abandon you. So the chances of you saying what your needs are or being upfront from the very beginning of a relationship are really slim because of that deep fear of the partner walking away. It can be really scary. Like, you can always feel like you're walking on eggshells, even if that person is securely attached and they're inviting you into something bigger. It might take a while for you to relax enough to then also become securely attached, because anxious attached people can become more securely attached when they can observe people who are securely attached and know how to be like that. So they can do that through observation, but also through different daily practices. So we're going to head to our next commercial break. You're listening to The Pleasure Zone here on Inspired Choices Network, and we'll be right back after this commercial.
Are you secretly a voyeur, wondering what's going on in other people's sex lives? What if now is the time for a totally different sexual evolution? Are you interested in people who are pioneers of different sexual and pleasurable practices? Lean in now with Milica Jelinic, where she will entice you and your body to know your own pleasure zone. On the Pleasure Zone radio show with sensual movement artist Milica Jelinic, you'll receive tools, inspiration, and a foundation to allow yourself to receive more in your sex life, and quite possibly other areas of your life as well. Listen for The Pleasure Zone with Milica every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 7 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Mountain Time, and 5 p.m. Pacific Time on InspiredChoicesNetwork.com. This is The Pleasure Zone with sensual movement artist Milica Jelinic. To participate in the program today, join our live studio audience in our chat room at InspiredChoicesNetwork.com. You can also make the choice to ask or comment by email. info@MilicaJelinic.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back, my sweet pleasure seekers. We are talking about attachment styles and love languages today. And our very, very last one we're going to talk about is the disorganized attachment style. So it's one that you don't really hear people mention a lot, but it's an interesting one for sure. So if you happen to have disorganized attachment style, you might notice a few things about yourself that you probably find intimate relationships really confusing, and even maybe you feel like you swing in a relationship, you might swing between hating somebody and loving them, and you might feel bipolar, or you might feel really conflicted about the person. Do I love them? Do I hate them? Do I want to be with them? Don't I want to be with them? So where does this stem from? And there's more to talk about, but part of where this stems from is highly traumatized early childhood. So it can be highly traumatized physical, emotional, mental, spiritual abuse, all of it. And because of the high level of trauma and never learning how to manage the trauma or never having an outlet for it, like extreme cases is where like children are locked in closets, you know, with no food, and they, you know, when the police go in to find them, the children have like scratched away the walls and are like eating the cement. I say that because in my practice, my mom and I, in our practice, we came across two kids that had lived like that until the police came in and found them. So yeah, I know these things exist. And so they would probably have disorganized attachment, really confused because they were never soothed, and they were highly neglected, and the trauma was just unbelievable, and probably never felt safe and were probably scared their whole life. And that's carried on into adulthood unless they've had a lot of help from outside sources. And when somebody's got a disorganized attachment style, they may look like they don't care because they just can't soothe themselves. They can't actually be calm. So when your nervous system isn't calm, you can't heal, but you also can't connect with people. When your nervous system is in fight or flight, you can't connect. When it's in frozen, you can't connect. So until your nervous system is calm in the polyvagal response, you can't actually connect with people. And disorganized attachment is on, it's so erratic that your nervous system is just out of whack at all times. So people might think you're antisocial. People may think that you are just a negative person. You might find that you are abusing drugs and alcohol. You might find that you are more aggressive or violent. You might feel a lot of despair. You might not take responsibility for your actions. You might crave security, but then also push it away at the same time because you might not feel worthy of love. There's so much that goes on with disorganized attachment. And the thing is that there's a tendency to repeat it because it's so ingrained, and the trauma was so intense and probably repetitive that there, and the neglect and the abuse, all of that is so repetitive that you tend to find partners that also, you know, bring the abuse, the neglect, and the trauma in. And sometimes even that plays out in scenarios with different kink that is desired to kind of try and work out the scenario. So it can be healing if you have somebody that's a dom or a sub that you can work with that can help you work the scenarios, but they need to be a professional and be trained on how to do that for you. It can be a really healing modality for that situation. Though, so what we're talking about here too is the love language that's connected to disorganized attachment. And with that, it's really complicated because that'll probably change on the fly. It could change within a minute, depending on how the nervous system is reacting to the person. A smell could even change it. A scenario could change it. A sound could change it because the nervous system is on such erratic fight or flight or froze mode. It's just jumping everywhere all the time that they have no idea what they need, and they don't know how to ask for it either. So disorganized attachment could use a lot of love and could use a lot of therapy and support for sure. And it will take somebody with disorganized attachment probably a really long time to learn to trust themselves and then to be able to trust others. So there are ways and tools. If you identify as one of those people and you could use some help, I'm happy to get on a call with you for half an hour for free and just look at some options for you and maybe redirect you if you need that too.
Thank you for listening to The Pleasure Zone with sensual movement artist Milica Jelinic. The Pleasure Zone returns next Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, 6 p.m. Mountain, and 5 p.m. Pacific on InspiredChoicesNetwork.com. We hope you'll join us. Until then, have the best week of your life by choosing to be turned on and tuned in to your body.